Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Paul Charchian.
Tons of risk, tons of upside.
The leader at Fanball and League Safe.
The leader is good. The leader is great. We surrender our will as of this day.
Guiding you through the waiver wire.
I took the bike.
I picked it up off the waiver wire. Mm-hmm.
That's stealing.
Fantasy Sports Hall of Famer.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Charge.
Championship.
With Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Nebraska and Maryland this fall at Ryan Field. Buy tickets now at nusports.com. To the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And here is Paul Charchian. He is on Twitter at Paul Charchian, fanball.com, and KFAN. And as we are all social distancing and self-quarantining, our fantasy football guru is now going to restyle himself as a self-made board game guru, and why not? Hello, Charch.
Hi, Connor, Dan, it's been too long. Great to talk to you. I'm sorry it's under such weird circumstances, but it's always good to catch up. And, you know, I've been a board game fan for a long time, a video game fan. I have a video game radio show on KFAN, so just gaming in general. I love gaming, board games, video games, fantasy football. It's really a game. I love all that stuff. So it's all in my wheelhouse.
Now, your first recommendation that I see on your list, I got to tell you, I'm out. I know Pandemic is a very popular and well-designed game, and people love playing it, but it would take a strong constitution to want to actually get into that in our current environment, would it not?
Well, yeah. So for people who don't know, Pandemic is an absolute pillar of the board gaming community and arguably the best board game ever made. And what happened when it came out 10 years ago, what Pandemic did that no board game had ever really done before is it provided a platform to play cooperatively. So you and your friends or your family all get to play together against the game instead of against each other. And why that was so important, guys, was this. Typically with most board games, whoever's like the most strategic is, you know, or maybe just the smartest, ends up winning most of the games, and that's rarely a level playing field. It's a little bit like tennis. You need to play at somebody your own level to have a really good time. And that's what Pandemic did, is it brought us all together, so we were all working together as a team. So you could play with your 8-year-old child, or you could play with, you know, other people who just weren't as good as you were, or vice versa. Maybe you're the one that's not as good. You could play with others. And now it equaled out that playing curve. And the game was also a brilliantly designed game anyway, as you battled against four different global pandemics that were erupting across the planet. Now, for some people like you, it sounds like, you know, you're tapping out on anything that has to do with anything that involving a pandemic, and I get that. However, there are other people like, hey, I can band together with my family and battle the pandemic. That's cathartic. I'm into that.
So I know, Charge, for a lot of people, Settlers of Catan had its run a few years ago. And I know even the pronunciation Catan and Catan goes back and forth between folks. But
it does.
I know it had its run, but people are still interested in kind of like that turn-by-turn, strategy-based thing. Is there a sequel of or a soul of Settlers that's going to get people in a group that's going to be a sit-down, you know, lock it up, long play type game? Because I think that's what we are tied up here for.
Yeah, and we are, right? And by the way, board games are pretty hard to find. It's turning into a scarce commodity now. As I'm recommending board games to people, and they're like, well, I can't get that. Target doesn't have it. Walmart doesn't have it. Where can I find it? And, you know, the local board game shops that are in most of our towns are by and large closed. So, you know, you can't necessarily get anything from them either. Catan is an absolute classic. It's sold somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 million copies worldwide, which is, you know, you're really into video game territory at that point, and actually extremely successful video game territory at that point. And Catan continues to power on, and there's a bunch of expansions that alter and vary the game in a lot of different ways. But there are also a lot of other good games that that really work for almost anybody. I'll give you another really common one that's easily available called Ticket to Ride.
Have you guys played that?
Love that game. Tell listeners what you love about Ticket to Ride.
It's a game you can play for a while and have wild swings through it, which I really like. And there are a number of different ways to win in how you construct your different trains throughout the different maps that you can play. You got to out-strategize your opponent, but you can get surprised pretty easily too. And that kind of wild swing game is fun for me because it's not Monopoly, where just as soon as somebody squats on property, it's kind of over and just a long, drawn-out thing to the finish.
And let's touch on Monopoly for just a second. That game sucks.
It could
never be published today. And the only reason that it's a thing today is because it got published in a day and age in which, you know, there was no other options out there. You know, there's only one strategy to winning Monopoly, which is to buy everything you can possibly buy at the beginning, you know, as much as you can buy it. And then it's just luck of the dice. It's a terrible game that nobody should ever invest in when there's all of these brilliant games that have been made in the last 10 years, especially that ramp up the gameplay, the fun factor, so many different ways that it's, you know, there's nobody that should be playing Monopoly right now.
There's so many of these descriptions of the games are just hilarious. I mean, the name itself, for a game to be called Secret Hitler is funny.
Who's going to wear the mustache?
The way you describe this here, it's fascist versus liberals during Hitler's rise to power in early 30s Germany. In this game of secret identity, the liberals try to root out the fascists and eventually figure out who among you is Hitler. you picture this like a 1970s TV commercial. Oh, mom, you're Hitler. You got me.
Secret Hitler was designed by one of the people that invented Cards Against Humanity. And, most of your listeners are familiar with that. It's one of the great hits in the board gaming space of all time. And in Secret Hitler, it's a party game where you play with 6 to, I believe, 12 people. And you don't – the fascists, it's half of the group are fascists, half of the group are liberals, and one person is Hitler. And the fascists are working to try to keep Hitler's identity secret, and the liberals are trying to find out who Hitler is and ultimately kill him before he can come to power. So this is before Hitler's actually gotten to the chancellorship. So it's a super fun game of finger pointing. Everybody's like, no, I'm not the fascist. And then ultimately the game requires the fascists to sort of give clues about who they are in a very subtle way. And it is so much fun. Secret Hitler is one of the best party games ever made.
Any game that involves swearing up and down that I'm not Hitler is probably worth it for a couple of bucks. That works for me.
Absolutely.
Church, I know you get into video games a ton, and a lot of people have we're actually on the show, on the Bernstein and McKnight show, we're actually working to get an MLB The Show league going up.
Great.
For what it's worth, I've had some issues with tech support over there at MLB The Show, and their responses have been cryptic at best, but we're going to get it going. I was reading through your Twitter timeline and saw a game that I was literally playing last night pop up on it. Yeah. Civilization VI.
Yes.
Is awesome. It's a sit-down build game that's just fantastic, but I know like the barrier to entry there is pretty high. How would you advise people who are interested in a game, you know, kind of like a game like that, a strategy online video game, get into that realm?
Civilization is the series of video games I've played more than any other. I'm talking across the 6 different generations of Civilization. I put in easily 1,000 hours into that. Into this particular one, Civilization VI, I'm probably 300 hours into it. It is awesome. And the premise of Civilization is brilliant. You basically start with a couple of cavemen and sticks, and you're going to ultimately go from that all the way up through the ages of civilization to the point that you are building rockets to go to other planets. And meanwhile, while you are building cities and colonizing and figuring out what kind of technology you want to have and whether or not you're going to be an army-based marauding caravan of looters, or if you're going to be egg-headed nerds who spend their time sheltered and learning and expanding your city, the computer opponents or other player opponents are also doing the same thing on a limited map. And so eventually you start running into borders with other people, and then conflict arises. It's Civilization's a fantastic game. It's available on the PC, the Xbox, the PlayStation, and the Switch version is shockingly good for a game that's pretty in-depth to be able to play on the small screen. It's very good, too.
One of the categories listed here is wife-husband games, which I'm sure can also be wife-wife games and husband-husband games.
Yes.
And this one intrigues. It is Patchwork, described as Tetris in a board game, easy, fun, and fast. And this is if you have a spouse who's maybe hesitant about playing games, this is the one. Why Patchwork?
So Patchwork is a board game for two players in which you are trying to fill a board with Tetris-like figures that are kind of like, in this case, they're quilt patches. But it's really Tetris on a board. Super fun, fast. I know Tetris doesn't necessarily sound scintillating, but it's really thoughtful and fun. And you only get to pick from there's like 80 different sized shapes, 80 different shapes in the game. But at any given on your turn, you only get three to choose from, and so you have to pick the shape that you want that can fit your board the best. Patchwork is a really fun game that has zero barriers to play. Basically anybody 6-7 years old up to 97 could end up playing Patchwork. It's a really fun game and highly recommended.
The reason why I like that too, and so many of these games are either right brain or left brain, and it's either sort of visual, spatial, or it's logic. And I guess I'd probably lean more toward the former than the latter. It sounds like the level of design charge is such that these really good games are able to work on both, and especially in a team environment, take advantage of people's individual abilities.
Well, yeah, this is one of the great things about this new age of board gaming that just wasn't around 10 years ago, is there are a lot of games that they've built to just be available to a huge audience. And a lot of the games that we've already talked about, like Settlers of Catan and Ticket to Ride, these are games that are, and Pandemic, that are playable almost ubiquitously. And the ones that sell really, really well are the ones that don't require you to be MIT math nerd. That anybody can play and have a great time, and they've cracked the code on fun at every level in many of these games, and those are the ones that we end up talking about as all-time classics.
So, Charge, assuming we do get back to fantasy football and away from our board games at some point here in the near future, free agency has happened. What is, in your mind, the biggest impact move fantasy-wise throughout the NFL over the last week and a half?
Well, clearly Nick Foles going to the Bears, I think, without a doubt. I mean, that changed the whole landscape of fantasy football. Or maybe not. Yeah. And by the way, assuming the football season goes off on time, think about the pent-up demand there's going to be for football season.
Huge.
People are going to be rabid for that game like we've never seen before. It's going to be – it's the fantasy industry. It's bad for the fantasy industry right now. It's going to be great when fall rolls around and football's here, and we've all missed out on baseball, hockey, and maybe basketball as well. I think the biggest move is Todd Gurley to – and there haven't been a ton of moves. There's been a lot of re-signings, but Todd Gurley going to the Falcons, where presumably he's the starting running back there. It's a good stylistic fit for him. He can catch the ball. He still gets all the goal line work. It's a high-functioning offense. That's probably the single biggest move that we've seen so far. And if people missed it, Devonta Freeman got released outright, and he's just a free agent out there. So – yeah, Todd Gurley move is going to be a big one. And then here from Minnesota, the trading of Stephon Diggs to Buffalo, where he teams up with Josh Allen. And, Stephon Diggs was Minnesota Minneapolis Miracle. I mean, there was a legendary play, arguably the biggest play in the history of the franchise. And up until week four of last year, Stefon Diggs was beloved. He was a popular figure in town. He had endorsements. There were no blemishes on his character whatsoever. And then he basically sat out of practice in week four after the Vikings lost to your Bears. It was an ignominious loss, and the Vikings played probably their worst game of the season. And Diggs pouted after that, and things between him and Kirk Cousins soured to the point that they ended up shipping him off to Buffalo, where, you know, if he didn't like the quarterback stylings of Kirk Cousins, wait until he gets a load of the least accurate deep passer in the NFL, Josh Allen, firing 10 yards over his head when he's 20 yards downfield. That's what he's now got in Buffalo. So he whined his way out of town, and that becomes another, probably the second biggest, along with DeAndre Hopkins, is another really big move among the big moves in the offseason. I think those are two of the three. And then the DeAndre Hopkins debacle, where Houston just gave him up for free to Arizona. That certainly is a big move as well.
Oh, that's just pure nonsense. I can't wait to see Josh YOLO Allen with Stephon Diggs. That's going to be a bunch of fun. But why is Hopkins so much farther down on the list here, Church? Is it because of the number of targets in Arizona, or just because what's the reason here?
Well, you know, I think it probably should be higher. DeAndre Hopkins is obviously great, and assuming Kyler Murray gets better. And I think he will, right? Year two, he should get better. You know, he just wasn't able to generate much of a passing offense, and we didn't find any real fantasy value, you know, regular, dependable fantasy value from his receivers last year. But that likely changes here. But there's still, you know, Christian Kirk's good. There's still Larry Fitzgerald on the bitter end of a Hall of Fame career. And then you fit in DeAndre Hopkins. That, you know, whether or not there's enough ball to go around to make DeAndre Hopkins as valuable as he was in Houston with better quarterbacking and offense that went entirely through him is still up for debate a little bit. So Hopkins will be roughly wide receiver. He'll be in the second tier of wide receivers for me, probably in the wide receiver 7-8 range when we start the season and we're talking in August. And Stefon Diggs will probably be wide receiver, I'm going to guess 12, 13, something along those lines in Buffalo.
In all seriousness regarding Nick Foles, though, what is the actual fantasy analysis of that move, and how do you look at the Bears quarterback situation if you're trying to get it figured out?
Well, Foles has been able to generate in sometimes he's been able to generate fantasy value, but on a per game played last year, he was quarterback 41 in fantasy points per game. I mean, that means there were backup quarterbacks who were outscoring him. So from a fantasy standpoint, I think there's still a lot of question about whether or not he's going to be able to generate much. Now, he was a productive fantasy quarterback for when he was with the Eagles and only with the Eagles. But otherwise, I think it's going to be very much a wait and see sort of situation. And fortunately, you know, Allen Robinson helps a lot, and he can make some bad quarterbacking look better than it is. That I think that part helps. But maybe other than that, I don't see a lot that I love here from Nick Foles. And honestly, I thought the move was baffling your squad picked up one of the worst quarterback contracts in the NFL and paid a draft pick, a much needed draft pick to do it. I don't love that move when you could have had, I don't love Cam Newton either, but he would have cost you nothing if you wanted to pick him up.
Well, it's the same front office that had to trade up for Mitch in the first place. So, you know, it's that kind of run.
There's that. And then the Jimmy Graham contract. By the way, I think every team in the NFC North got worse this offseason. Vikings got demolished by free agent losses in their defense. Your team, I think, has made a couple of dicey moves. You look at the Packers. They've lost some key players in free agency, mm-hmm. including Blake Martinez. And so, yeah, I don't know that any of the three relevant teams in this division got any better in the offseason.
Church, here is to your good health going forward and your family. Appreciate your time, and maybe we'll end up talking again soon.
Well, you know, honestly, in a way, I hope we don't. I hope there's so many sports to talk about soon that, you know, we're not breaking down video games and board games again anytime soon. But yeah. maybe that's the case. And Lord, the important thing about video games is among your listeners, if they can't talk about sports and if sports is not a key topic, where's video games rank? I mean, other than like girls, we spend the next most time talking and thinking about video games. So video games is always important to our listening audience.
Thanks, Charge.
Appreciate you, Charge.
Thanks, guys. It was great catching up. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.